This morning, as I was praying about what to share, a story came to me. And there's two similar stories in the Bible, but this was the one that I picked. And it's the woman from Bethany. And it's in Luke 7, and it's 36 to 50. So I'm just going to start reading, and I'm gradually going to go through the story. And the aim of the story is to show you how Jesus, when he was there, was able to change a culture and change a mindset without using any forceful provision from law or things around him. And as a church, I know that you are starting to expand. You're in the community. You're reaching out to others. And you have neighbors that maybe are a little stubborn in hearing God's heart. And so I just wanted to give some more clarity as to the fact that Jesus could do it and that we can still do it. And this is a new year, so it's a new opportunity that we want to take. So in verse 36, it says, "One of the Pharisees asked him to eat with him, and he went into the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table." I just want to talk about the Pharisee a little bit. So we have Simon's house, and Jesus has been invited to a meal. I would say probably dinner, because it's the biggest one. So we have Simon the Pharisee. The Pharisees were people that were known as the separated ones. So what they did with Judaism is they took the faith and they made it one of law. So it was all black and white, white being good, black being bad. There was no in between. If the law did not cover something, then it was sinful. And so they put a lot of pressure on it. They were very radical in their time. And the reason that they held such strong power was because of the law, they had a good relationship with Rome. So Rome trusted that they could run their people, that there would be no rebellions or anything coming up against Rome, who ruled the whole empire at the time. They were also critics of Jesus. So when Jesus got invited to this house, he knew that he wasn't going into a friendly atmosphere. The reason that they were critics of Jesus was because he threatened their security with Rome, because he didn't think the black and white, he thought the gray. He saw the heart of the matter, he saw the people in need, and he saw the real heart behind God's message, and he wanted to bring that to them. So during this story, I'm going to talk about three characters. This is the first one. The second one is obviously Jesus, and he reclined at the table. What they used to do is if you were invited into someone's house, the doors were left open, and if you were the owner of the house, you would recline at the head of the table, and then you would have all of those that were close to you around the table to the least at the other end. So Simon is in blue and Jesus is right at the other end because he's not close to Simon. Simon has some walls up because he's not sure about Jesus. And his heart in inviting Jesus to the table was basically to test Jesus. So there's a little bit of pride in Simon's heart. He was right as a Sadducee. He lived his life to the law and he lived it good and he lived it well. And he wasn't found wanting by the Sadducees and the people of Judaism. So Jesus is sitting at the end, reclining, and they would recline like this and eat a meal. And it also shows that Jesus was pretty relaxed. So Jesus walks into this situation. He knows that he is going to be criticized. He's going to be asked questions. And people are going to want to know. Now, the thing about a meal in Jewish houses back then was that your neighbors could wander through the door and just stand at the edge and just watch you eat and talk about your guest and figure out who they were. So not only did Jesus have Simon and his family, but he also had probably the neighborhood there. And so it was Simon's chance to prove that Jesus didn't stand for the right thing, but it was also Jesus's chance to spread the word and the love of God. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the next person. So we have the woman. I'm going to read the verse. "And behold, the woman of the city who was a sinner." I'm going to stop there. So a woman living in the same city, no relationship to Simon, came into the house of Simon. And it says she was a sinner. So obviously she'd heard Jesus' message before. She had probably changed her ways in life before. She may have been known for some kind of major sin. We don't know exactly what. And so she was a sinner. So she changed her way. She was trying to live right. She was trying to gain respect. But with past sin, there's shame. There's guilt and there's frustration. You want to go back and you want to change your life. You want to make changes. And we've all been there. We've all had regret. This woman probably walked into this house knowing full well the cost of what she'd done, but wanting more. And seeing Jesus entering the house, she was probably like, this guy teaches love. He understands what it means to forgive. I've seen him, but I need to know for sure. So we go on. Standing behind him. So she was a sinner, and when she learned that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment. Now, this ointment is expensive. So this woman would have had to work almost 2 years just to pay for this ointment alone. And they would use this for burial, and they'd save it so that when the burial happened, someone died, they'd embalm the body and the smell, so the smell wouldn't be so bad. And then they would put them in their tomb or their grave. And so in order to be buried well, your aim was to actually earn enough money to buy this ointment. This ointment was so expensive. So she'd worked 2 years to get this. And as a woman, she would have had to work twice as hard as a man back then to earn a living or a wage. Don't know how she did it. She could have been selling things. So, standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head and kissed his feet and anointed them with the ointment. So she's standing behind them. In Jewish culture, if you were married to a man, he was known as your protector. So if you were to walk down the street, the man would always go first, the woman would walk behind. And in the Muslim culture, it's very similar. They do the same thing. It's respect to the head of the household, and it's also respect to that of a protector of yourself. So when she went in, just as a visitor, with the doors wide open, she could quite easily go right behind the table and stand behind the man that she figured would be able to protect her from any judgment of others. So Jesus, who he was compassionate, merciful, and loving, and he would have protected her. In Jesus' time, when he was preaching the gospel in the parables, he'd always include stories about women. He'd always want them to know that they were part of the kingdom of God. And so he always valued them. So, washing of the feet. When a guest came into your house, it was customary that they wash your feet. It was a sign of friendliness, a sign of blessing. But Simon didn't do it. So Jesus knew the minute he was reclining at the table that this definitely was not a friendly place to be. But yet he still went and he still sat there graceful and loving. They would wash their feet after entering the house, before meals, before going to bed. So to admit this was a sign of unfriendliness. So everybody even stood watching knew that this was not a welcomed guest, but it was someone that was coming to be questioned by Simon. We also see that there are different symbols that come up in this. So she anointed him with the oil, and he wiped him with his tears and kissed him. To anoint someone meant that you were blessing them. You were loving them. You were accepting the fact that they were a valued member of even your family, even if they were a stranger. And then if you were kissing them, it was a sign of joy and blessing, of understanding that they were just the person that you needed to be with. And she washed his feet with her hair. So when she washed her feet with his hair, she saw that, like, it was a sign of vitality. When you wash someone's feet with your hair or dry it with your hair was meant to be a sign of your vitality, but also it was your glory. So your reigning glory was your hair. So she was laying down her glory at Jesus' feet and blessing him. So we have here Simon the Pharisee looking all serious, ready to talk to Jesus. We have Jesus reclining, and we have the woman sitting at the feet of Jesus. And she didn't just do it once, she did it continuously. It was continuous. She wanted to know that there was more to what she was doing. So we go on to verse 39. And it says, "Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, 'If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who was touching him, for she is a sinner.'" So he said it to himself. He didn't say it out loud. So Simon's sitting there looking at Jesus, looking at this woman and judging. His pride is so big because he's right in everything. He doesn't understand that outside the law, there's compassion, there's love, and there's mercy. And in a way, Jesus' heart is breaking for Simon because he's like, "Can you not see? Can you not understand?" And Jesus, answering, said to him, "Simon, I have something to say to you." And he answered, "Say it, teacher." So Jesus is getting ready to tell Simon exactly what the situation is without bringing offense to his heart that is already hardened, but trying to soften it, trying to help him to see. So he's going to play on Simon's wisdom a little bit. "A certain moneylender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now, which of them will love him more?" Simon answered, "The one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt." And he said to him, "You have judged rightly." He wanted to see Simon's wisdom, and it was there, and it was a gift. And it wasn't wrong to be wise, but here's what happens next. "Then turning toward the woman, he said to Simon, 'Do you see this woman? I entered your house. You gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment.'" So Simon's going to sit there and he's going to be like, okay, kind of get this, but I'm not sure, my pride is still there. Then he continues, this is a key verse. "Therefore I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For she loved much, but he who is forgiven little loves little." Simon had made little mistakes in his life, maybe. He'd gone to the Lord to justify what he had done, and he covered himself up with his conscience being made better because of the law. And this woman, who had little understanding, knew that there was something more she needed. She'd sinned in a big way. So when she came and she knew that she was forgiven, there's more chance for rejoicing and knowing, "I am redeemed of this. I don't need to go back there." So if there are things in your life that you're frustrated with, you want to go back because of regret, don't go there. Don't take yourself there, because Jesus has already covered those things. He wants you to live a life full of joy and full of love. So then he goes on and he says to her, "Your sins are forgiven." Then those who were at the table with him began to say among themselves, "Who is this? Who even forgives sins?" And he said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." So we have the woman who has been redeemed. But God's heart is not just for that woman. God's heart is also for Simon. Pride blinds us. It makes us not see where we're going. And a change of culture in that room, Jesus had to show that Simon was valued, but this woman was valued even more at that point in time. So I was thinking about how God would view Simon. And I found a story. I love this story. It's linked a little bit with the prodigal son. But in the heart of what Simon felt and the way he was, I really felt that Jesus was sitting there thinking this of Simon. He knew probably that in a few years' time, Simon was going to play a huge role in what happened to him. Yet he still loved Simon. He loves the people that do the worst in the world, and he still has hope for them. That's how big his love is. So if we've done something wrong, think about the rulers of North Korea and people like that who God still loves and wants to see them redeemed. So I'm going to read a story. It's by G.W. Ravensbury, and he was an itinerant preacher back many years ago. And the way he made his living was he would preach off of the train. So he would get on the train and he'd travel from town to town, but he'd also evangelize on the trains. So Ravensbury tells the story of a train ride he took that was more strange than any of the others. Ravensbury was sitting at the back of his train car, and he noticed that there was this young gentleman who was sitting a few rows ahead of him. He had his cardboard suitcase stuffed and tight up underneath his seat, and he was appearing very anxious. This man would get up, pace the car for a bit, and then sit back down. He did this every 10 minutes or so. Finally, Ravensbury decided that he would go have a chat with the young man. So he got up, asked if he could have a seat next to him, and introduced himself. "Son, my name's Ravensbury, and I'm a preacher. You seem like you've got a lot on your mind. Would you like to talk?" Ravensbury said it was like opening a spigot. The young man's life story just came pouring out. "Me and my pa didn't get along well at all when I was growing up. We'd fuss and fight. Shoot, we'd get into it over nothing. One day, we were getting after each other real hard. I can't even remember what about. When I said something like, 'Well, why don't I just leave?' My daddy said, 'Son, there's the door. Don't let it hit you on the backside on the way out.' I didn't really want to go, but I was so angry that I went to my room and packed everything I could fit into my cardboard suitcase. And as I went to leave, my daddy yelled back at me and said, 'Son, if you walk out that door, don't you ever come back.' I was so mad, I just laughed. Things didn't go too well for me after that. I kept wandering from one town to another, working one awful job after another, and I wasn't doing too good. One night, I was out drinking with some buddies, and we got this idea to try and rob this liquor store. When we got caught, I got sentenced to prison. But before I got out, I decided to write home to Mom and Dad. I told them I was in prison and about to get out. I said I was sorry for how I left and for what I did, that I'd understand if they'd never want to see me again. But I'd be passing through town, you see. My house is just off the tracks, here about 10 miles ahead. I told them if they wanted to see me, to tie something white out in the tree. But if there wasn't any white, I'd just go on through to the next town, and they'd never have to hear from me again. Mr. Ravensbury, if there's nothing white hanging out on the tree, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm at the end of my rope. I just don't know what I'm going to do." Ravensbury said as they grew closer, the young man became even more nervous. Finally, the young man nudged Ravensbury and said, "My house is right up around this bend. Do you think you could see if anything's white's tied there for me? I just can't look." Ravensbury said he pressed his forehead up against the window, hoping to see something, anything, that was white tied up in the tree. And he said as they turned that corner, it was the most majestic sight he'd ever seen. Apparently, that family had emptied their house of everything, towel, every washcloth, every bedspread, every pillowcase, and even every piece of underwear. Everything in that house was out there flapping in that tree, and it was just a tree of white out there in the yard. Ravensbury called to the boy, "Young man, look." As soon as the young man caught a glimpse of that tree, he grabbed a suitcase, rushed out the door, and leapt off the train car as quick as he could. Ravensbury said that the last image he saw was this young man dragging his cardboard suitcase up the hill and an older couple bursting out the house to come greet him. Ravensbury said that is a picture of what God's grace is like, that the cross was God's way of emptying heaven's linen closet of everything white so that it would be known for all time that God wants us home, no matter what we've done or where we've been or what's coming. So just a heads up, like, as you are trying to reach people that don't know who God is, they don't understand the heart of God, you're going to come across Simons. You're going to come across the woman. You're going to come across people that are more complicated, that are going to have issues that you're like, "I don't know how I'm going to redeem this. I don't understand in my own strength how I'm going to do it." But God cares enough to give you the words to say, and you'll say things that you're like, "Wow, I don't even know how that came out of my mouth." So just as you're going throughout your day, I want you to know that if God can change the culture of a house where he wasn't welcomed, where he knew he would never be welcomed, and still love the man who had a role in playing in his crucifixion, then he can have a heart for your neighbor and the most complicated leader of a country, anybody. So I just wanted to share this story with you as an encouragement as you go throughout your week, your year, that you can take anything, you can make a difference.